Well, hello, Liam.
Awesome. Hi, Debbie. Great to speak to you.
Great to speak with you. I can honestly say you are the first person I have ever spoken with in my entire 67 years who was looking to have a curse put on them.
I've been hearing that a lot, actually. I don't think anyone's ever actually asked for this before.
Yeah. I mean, the rest of us, I mean, we're cursed anyway. So,
right.
In some manner or other. So, that intrigued me from the very start, Liam, that you would ask for this. Now, I know you address this to a degree in the documentary, but, you know, what is it that really possessed you to want to be cursed? What, you know,
yeah,
it just
fascinates
me.
Yeah, I mean, people who've seen the film still ask that question, and as you say, I do explain it to a degree in the film, but people just want more of an answer, I think, from that. I get that. Like, why would you look for this? The honest truth is that I think the only answer, really, is that I don't think I really believed to begin with. So, you know, if I really believed in it to begin with in the outset, I don't think anyone in their right mind would ask for it. So I think I genuinely was skeptical. I didn't believe it would have an effect on me in that way. That's not to say I didn't believe in things that were spiritual. I just wasn't entirely sure other people had the ability to command that spirituality. I didn't believe anyone else actually had the ability to create a curse and put that on someone else. So I think that I wasn't too concerned because I didn't think it would work, honestly. Now, much to my detriment, I started to experience a whole bunch of things. And my opinion has changed on that.
Now, do you think once you had the curse placed on you, and you started having bad dreams, and the bad dreams got worse, and it sent you digging even deeper in your travels, in your journey to explore this. Do you think that much of that was self-manifested because it's like, okay, I'm cursed. I just know something's going to happen.
Yeah, I think there's an element of that, right? So I think, you know, Theo, things were happening to me and I was having negative effects in my life for sure. Now, is that spiritual? Was that a result of the curses that people put upon me? Or was that purely psychological? And was that my brain doing this to myself? That's the interesting question, right? And I think to a degree, I allow the audience to make their own interpretation on that. I kind of flip-flop on it, honestly. I think it's not a black and white answer, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, yes, I think it's a huge part of my own psychology was affecting me. But then why was my mind sort of finding myself in such negative things? You know, is that what magic is? And there's a question there. Is magic a sense of psychological manipulation? That's a question. But again, I still think it's deeper and more than that. I think there's something to the power of our own minds, and it's very difficult to explain, and I don't think in 90 minutes I'm going to completely solve that puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
I think people have been trying to do that for hundreds and thousands of years, but it is a journey, an exploration of those subjects.
Mm-hmm. In many ways, it equates, in my eyes, it equates to the search for faith and religion. Be it good, be it bad, you know, it's two sides of the same coin. And everybody is searching.
Yeah.
Everybody is searching. Whether, you know, if you have a strong faith belief and God is good, God is divine, I believe in Christ, I believe in this, Allah, whatever. By the same token, there's the flip side. You've got to have a bad counter to good and vice versa. That's the exploration that you really expose here in the documentary, Liam, that I find so fascinating is we all know about the good and the search for God and all of this, but now it's what happens when we go the other direction. This is so well plotted out. How long did you prepare for this, and what kind of research did you do to go on this journey from LA to New Orleans to Mexico to India to the fascinating Satan's Cave. I'm fascinated by that. And then back to Uncurse Me. How did you research and plot this out? Because it's extremely interesting.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a lot of work, right? so I've been fortunate that I've been shooting travel documentaries for, short-form travel documentaries for a number of years now. So I've traveled to Mexico and India before and a whole bunch of other countries. And honestly, everywhere I went, I would always see elements of people practicing what I would call like alternative spiritual beliefs. And it just captured my mind. And so the research was potentially done years in the making of when I was traveling to different countries. In particular, I think one of the moments that sparked this idea was I was filming a documentary in India about the transgender law in India that had just changed, and they'd officially created transgender as a third recognized gender in India, which is very forward thinking. And but at the time, we weren't there to film this, but we saw this tantric practitioner doing a spiritual prayer ceremony in the background somewhere, and I was fascinated by this. And so that got me to thinking, you know, I asked our producer at the time, what's he doing? What's going on there? And he said, you know, it's a magical practice. Sometimes they have negative practices. They do practice black magic, even though it's outlawed in India. And that caught my attention. So over the years, I've been kind of grabbing stories, speaking to my location producers in different countries, and just trying to, like, what's there? So I think that the broader idea had been gestating for a while. And then when it came to actually finding funding and being able to go out there and do it, that was the hardest part of this film, really, was how do you meet people, ask them, A, would they be prepared to speak about their spiritual practice, and B, would they be prepared to put a curse on me? And as you can imagine, the doors closed quickly and the phones got slammed down quickly. Because, and I think this is an important thing to point out, is that across the board, 100% of the spiritual practitioners I met in all the different countries, they all say their spiritual practices and their magical practices are all about doing good and all about positives and helping people. And that doing harm isn't what their practices are about.
Yeah.
But what I would say is in a number of these practices, which I found out, there is an element of performing what I'd call negative magic for the ability to, in self-defense. That's why they have this practice. So in order to defend themselves, in order to protect themselves, sometimes offense is the best defense, right? So that's why it exists. And so that's what I found.
Once you decided you were going to make a documentary on your journey to get yourself cursed, and you start picking at your, you can laugh, it's okay. And you start selecting who you're going to speak with on camera and who you're going to seek for guidance in your journey. I mean, you've got Dean Roden, who's a scientist at IONS. You've got a voodoo priestess. You've got Lilith, the voodoo priestess. You've got Ty Emeka, who I was very impressed with, the voodoo priest in New Orleans. You finally get a hoodoo practitioner who will put a curse on you. And then you delve into ESP. You've got a psychologist here. So you've got clinicians along with the spiritual and magical aspects of this journey. Was it difficult to find these individuals, number one, and number two, for them to agree to be on camera to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. It was very difficult to get people to you know, particularly to show their magical practice on camera.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the things I'm most proud of is that we're seeing spiritual rituals and practices that I've never seen in cinema before, certainly in factual cinema. And I'm really proud that we managed to capture that. And what I found was speaking to people over the phone, sending people with an email just did not work. People just thought I was crazy. So we had to have a huge leap of faith, as it were, to go to these destinations, particularly, and just knock on doors and actually meet people, be able to look people in the eye and say, this is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. It's a journey of respectful discovery and being a seeker in this spiritual world. And when I explained it in that way and explained, you know, my sort of lifelong interest in this world, that began to open up the doors. But it certainly wasn't easy. You know, people don't want to look foolish. And, you know, they think that some filmmakers are going to come around and make fun of them. And that's the number one thing I aim not to do in this film, is to make fun of anyone's spiritual practice, because I have a deep respect for it. And to your point, we also, as we say, we go to the Rhine Institute, which is one of the oldest parapsychological research societies in the U.S. and you know, getting them to speak on camera about what's the potential science behind what people would call magic. And actually, it's surprisingly, Dr. Dean Radin, who's a very established scientist at the institute, at the IONS labs, yes, he has written so many books on this subject. And so science really is studying this phenomena, but at the same time, it really pushes against the mainstream view of what science and our kind of materialistic world, materialistic view of science is. And so people don't want to believe in magic, and they don't want to believe that there is any science behind it. But you just have to look at the amount of research there is. There's evidence for this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the fact that you're showing that, in addition to these magical practitioners, that adds a real element of intrigue. And another thing, the whole two sides of the coin again. And I really appreciate that you brought that into this. Now, I have to ask you, how difficult was it when you were in Mexico and with Hermano Juan and filming and participating in the Blood Pact with Satan? Did you have trepidation about this, making a pact with the devil? And also, was he skeptical about even letting you in there with cameras? Because I know this, over the decades, whole belief of photographs and things will extract souls or might trap a soul or release it if it's captured on film or in camera or something. So I'm curious what the process was like for the Satan's Cave, which, by the way, the lensing is, Blakehorn's cinematography is stunning in there, stunning. But I'm curious about the challenges with that one, that particular instance, because it is so graphic, actually.
Yeah. That was, that's one of the moments on this project where at times I felt like I was on a bit of a runaway train, right? Mm-hmm. I go looking for this stuff, and the moment someone actually agrees to do this, so Hermano Juan agreed to introduce me to his very, very specific place where he calls Satan's Cave, where he can introduce me to Satan to make a blood pact with Satan. That in itself just sounds ridiculous, right? But it was one of those things, you know, that it felt like a runaway train. We were in motion, things were happening, and before I could really question what on earth I was thinking, I was writing this pact and entering into this cave, which was swarming with thousands of bats. We had to wait a good hour before the number of bats even died down enough for us to be able to walk in there. And then we were still being hit in the head with bats as the whole ritual went on. So that was a thing. In terms of how we managed to make that happen, I think to a degree, some of these practitioners are beginning to feel a little less persecuted, and so they are a little more open to sharing visually So to a degree, there's, I think the world's changing a little bit on that. Also, I think this question went either of two ways. When I went asking for a curse, the door either slammed closed in my face, or the practitioner thought, this is the craziest idea I've ever heard. Why not be a part of it? And I don't know. I think that there's sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes you create your own luck. But yeah, I'm still surprised that we managed to be able to show rituals like that on camera. Again, I've never seen it before in factual filmmaking. And I don't know that we'll see it again, because I'm not sure anyone else would want to do this.
Somehow I think you have cornered the market on this. I don't foresee anybody else wanting to deliberately and intentionally be cursed and then go make a blood pact with the devil. Call me crazy. You could have the patent on that.
I definitely feel like I wouldn't want to do this again, that's for sure.
Now, I have to commend you on the production values of the documentary. Once you get all of this footage, were you editing as you went to determine if you needed to go see somebody else? Did you plot out the journey and the journey first of USA, you know, New Orleans to Mexico to India, back to Mexico? Did you plot that out first, or did you decide to get more footage as you went along? Were you editing to see what you needed, you know, from a production standpoint, a directorial standpoint? You know, when do you know you have enough and have a through line to tell?
Yeah, I mean, that's important, right? The story is what you find. And it's interesting because going into the project, I had always planned to go to New Orleans, Mexico, and India, because we had to budget, you know, come up with a budget originally for where we would travel to. So that was a part of the plan, in part because I felt like it might take me all of those countries or none of them in order to find someone to actually put a curse on me. I didn't know. I felt like each country could be a complete bust. We had no idea. Like I said, we didn't know who we were speaking to often until we arrived in that country and searched for them. So it was very investigative in that sense. But in terms of plotting out the story, it's also interesting is, you know, when you set out on this, you have to have an idea, where might this story go?
Sure.
And as I said before, I was skeptical, so I suspected absolutely nothing would happen, and the film would sort of fizzle out with no, you know, Liam went looking for a curse, couldn't find one, or nothing happened, and, you know, there's no ending to the film. So to prepare for that, I was already thinking that the film would be more of a celebration of alternative spiritual practices. And so I felt like it would be more of, just looking at magic generally, more of an interesting story of people's beliefs. Mm-hmm. And from my research, I'd seen that there's a huge amount of positive community around these magical practitioners, and so I thought that it might be a celebration of that. Once I'd got back from these countries, and there was a break between India and Mexico of a good month or so where I began editing a bit, once I got back, I realized that although that still holds true, there is a lot of positives in these spiritual practices. From a story point of view, something else was happening. Things were happening to me. My psyche was being affected by this. Things were changing. And so it was definitely, okay, now we're finding the story. And I worked with a wonderful story producer, Nigel Levy, who helped me shape the film many ways because, you know, I'm directing the film, I'm in the film as a subject, and I'm also the editor, and that's a huge recipe for a bad film.
Yeah.
And I think you'd be naive or an egomaniac to think you can do all of that yourself. So I needed that objectivity. So I'd planned from the beginning to work with Nigel to kind of keep me on the straight and narrow, to keep me objective, and also to push me. There were scenes in the film that I wasn't sure I was comfortable with, because they were challenging. Maybe they didn't make me look in the right light. And he pushed me. He went, no, they are the story. If you're going to be honest, you need to show these moments. So, yeah, that was an important part of the story. So yes, the edit definitely adapted, and it's a better film for it, but my production schedule, particularly the post schedule, was a good nearly a year longer than I had planned for, because we had to rethink where the story was going. And yes, that meant interviewing additional people. And Dr. Michelle D'Amico, who's a doctor in psychology, I speak to her about my issues. Again, that wasn't in the original plan necessarily, but that we realized we needed to get that aspect of the story in there as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that Dr. D'Amico's, the interviews with her, her thoughts, her questions, I think were very important. Very important to bringing balance and questioning that the audience is going to have watching this. She is our eyes and ears in a great sense, asking you questions and you responding to her. Because she's asking the question everybody's going to be asking, are you nuts? Why would you want to be cursed? But
absolutely. I mean, she was fascinated by the subject once I told her about it. Now, I've known Michelle for a while anyway, and she was fascinated by the subject, and she said exactly that. Why would you do this? And she said, I am deeply fascinated to see what this does to you from a psychology point of view. And so she was kind of excited to speak to me to find out what I'd been up to.
And I think it's so important, and I'm so glad you incorporated her into this, because she's asking the questions that your audience is going to ask. And I think that's, with a film like this and the subject matter, I think that's really important, Liam. So it gives such great balance to the entire process. I don't want to give away the ending, but of course you do bookend this and go back to the first witches in Los Angeles that you first met with. So you bookend this beautifully and return to Griffin Said and Carrie Wolfe. So I really like that. And I like the visual tonal contrast that you have. Because when we get into the final 10 minutes or so of the film, we have a much lighter, brighter, the sun, the green trees, blue sky, which is very different than what we have encountered with all of your meetings, which many of them were just, such as in New Orleans, they're in the homes, the huts, the practicing places of these voodoo priests, or in a cave. So I really love that visual contrast, because it translates into your emotional bandwidth as well. So your visual and emotional bandwidth journey really follows a beautiful cinematic path, which is surprising in a lot of documentaries. So I applaud you for that, Liam. And
Thank you.
And something else that you bring in here is the music. You brought in music. It's not overkill. It's not something like a Hitchcock and a Bernard Herrmann or something with horrific things and the knife going stabbing or anything. What were you looking for musically to buttress and serve as an undercurrent here?
Yeah, so music was an interesting one. We had a very tight budget to make the film, and I spent most of the budget traveling to these amazing places and capturing great visuals, as you say. And to your point just before, my cinematographer, Blake Horn, fantastic cinematographer who I've worked with for many, many years, it did an amazing job on this film. And also my second camera, who's also a cinematographer in his own right, who is a friend of mine, who offered to come on as a second camera. And so we had two, you know, Blake is the credited cinematographer, but essentially we have two wonderful, wonderful filmmakers there, really bringing this together. And, you know, my background as a director, I'm actually have been working as a cinematographer myself for 20 years. So my... between the three of us, speaking about the visual tone of this film was really important to us. So we had a lot of conversations about how we wanted this to look, how we wanted the film to evolve. And I think documentaries need to be that. I think documentaries need to take on that cinematic approach now. It's not just factual TV. You know, that's how you differentiate a documentary film versus a TV show, or a documentary TV show. So we put a lot of effort into that. And so, you know, thank you for noting. I'm glad it's working and it stood out. And in terms of the... in terms of bringing that tone back around, yes, that was it was a natural thing when we spoke to the practitioners who we go back to, and again without giving anything away, the ritual we wanted to have there was very light, but that worked for them. That's what they wanted to do. So again, it was part cinematic choice and in part. Perfect union, I'd say. And to your point on music, I kind of went around the houses there, but I actually put together the music through found library music.
Wow.
And engineered it in a way to create a score of my own. I wouldn't say it was a score, I didn't write the music, but I... you know, music edited it to make the tone match for me. Now, again, as I said, that was partly from a budget point of view,
mm-hmm.
but partly as an editor, the finding the tone, I can't edit the film without finding the tone from the music. That's how I work when I edit. And so it became the music I found. I spent a huge, huge amount of time finding the right music to make it all work and to come together. And to me, it's too important to then give that away to a composer to then maybe shift the tone. And what I found through previous projects is that when you do that, you need to either get lucky and it works first time, or you need a lot of money to be able to pay for all the changes and amendments to get it sounding and feeling the way you originally intended it to. So I chose to come away from that and put the music and create the music score essentially myself. We found music that is often added to with tone and undertone and other sounds. So, you know, I remember looking at my edit timeline thinking, wow, I've got something like 48 tracks of audio lined up here to build this sound design. And you know, that wasn't originally my plan, but I'm pretty happy overall with the tone of where it landed.
I really think it works. And as I said, it doesn't overpower and it doesn't lead us. Your story and the places that you're going to and the practitioners that you're speaking with, that is what is always leading us, as it should. So I think you did, you know, using stock music, I think you did an amazing job with that aspect of this film, Liam.
Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, all credit to those musicians who we found and found their amazing works. And then, you know, there are ways to make that work for your film. You know, you can add to it a little bit with your sound design. And then, you know, it comes together. And so, yeah, I'm a big believer there's a lot of huge talent out there. And and I think, you know, you can find some of their amazing work and find it from stock, essentially. I would like to work with a composer in the future, but on future projects. But as I said before, I'd need to have a lot of confidence and a lot of time and probably money to be able to shape that in the way I shaped this film.
Now, I'm curious, because this is not your run-of-the-mill documentary. This isn't the kind of film that you're out having drinks with a friend one night and you say, you know, I think I'm going to make a film about this. Or at the breakfast table eating cornflakes. And, yeah, I think this would be a cool film to make. This is kind of an off-the-beaten-path, thinking outside of the box documentary. And it's one that undoubtedly is difficult to get financing for. How did you finance this film, if you can talk about that?
Yeah, I'm happy to. right. It's not easy to get funding for any film. And actually, to a degree, there were some elements that made this easier to find funding for, in the sense that it's kind of a high-concept film. Mm-hmm. A filmmaker goes out, put a curse on him to find out what would happen. You can say it in one line, and you get the whole film.
Yeah.
And so it was easy for people to understand. Often documentaries are a lot more nuanced than that, and great documentaries are sometimes hard to put in a one-liner. So to a degree, that helped. It was kind of a high concept. But the subject matter is crazy, and also my exec producer who funded the film, he would say that he worried at times, like, am I putting my money in an unsafe place? I'm asking a man to go get cursed. Will he ever come back? So there was that risk. But I would speak to, I actually got very lucky. Some would say this is a magical moment. I sat down and figured out, where am I going to go with to look for funding for this film? And it was a modest budget, but at the same time, finding money for film is hard. I literally went to LinkedIn and started searching for film investors on LinkedIn, believe it or not.
Wow.
The first person I found, I sent an email to with a pitch, and then he replied back on the same day saying, this sounds interesting, give me a call, and gave me his number. And can you believe, I thought that was so impossible, the first person I reached out to, that there's no way in the world this is for real, and this is probably isn't a real character anyway. And I ignored his message for 2 days. And he sent me another message saying, I don't usually chase investors looking for money, but if you are interested in this project, let me know. And we spoke on the phone, and he ended up becoming my sole investor and executive producer on this film. So it's a magical story.
On every level, it's a magical story, Liam. Oh, my God. So now, do you have any plans to go out and explore the other side of a curse? And do a documentary about being blessed with magic, such as Wiccan magic or something like that, as a counter to this one?
I don't know. I mean, I think that my idea was to see if any effects could come from this, from you know, venturing into this world and trying to have this put upon you. I think I proved that you all probably experienced something. Your choice and your definition of what it was I experienced, but I don't know that if I go out and look for a positive that it will say anything different. But I am fascinated by this world. I think in future projects, I'm teeing up something that's more, perhaps heavier into the science of psi phenomena. That's something I'm very interested in and always have been. And I think I would like to go deeper into that. We spoke to one institute, two places in this film. But I'd like to go a bit more into that and see a bit more of that research and maybe see a bit more of the actual evidence that they're finding. In this 90-minute film, I couldn't go too far into that.
Yeah.
But that's probably where I would like to lean into next. But I guess watch this space on that.
Because I'm curious to see what you do next as a follow-up to this. Because as I said at the top, this is fascinating. Forget the fact that you went and put a curse on yourself. It's delving into all of these different practitioners and what they do and their philosophies and all, plus the clinicians. It's fascinating. And I think people will really, I think they're going to appreciate it, and I think they're going to embrace it to a large degree. It posits a lot of questions. But I would love to see you continue to explore, because right now I think, you know, this is your niche. You've got the patent on this one, Liam.
Right.
I don't think anybody else is going to delve into this.
Right. This is definitely my interest. I mean, there are elements of, there are other sides to this, perhaps even darker areas that I didn't quite get into on this one that I could potentially look into too. So maybe there's more positive side. Maybe there's even darker stuff to see.
Yeah.
If that's even possible, I don't know, but potentially, I'm fascinated by the subject. As I said, I'm deeply fascinated by the science that's in this side of things. So I'm going to be in this world, I think, for a while. So I'm sure there's going to be more to come from me on this subject.
I can't wait to see more from you on in this area, in this subject, because it is, it's interesting, it's fascinating. And the way that you have crafted this story, laid it out, it's very cogent. Everything is very synergistic. It's very cinematic. It looks beautiful. Your production values are there. This is not some handheld Blair Witch, I'm running in the woods thing looking for a witch. On every level, really well done, Liam. I want more.
Fantastic. I mean, that's so great to hear. I mean, I'm super excited to have this come out into the world now and for people to see it. And, you know, always with a little trepidation as a filmmaker, especially when you're on screen. But it's super exciting to hear you say that. And thank you very much. Yes.
On a parting note, I have to say the curse clearly did not work because you made it through. You made this film and you have a beautiful product. So the curse, so the, you were not cursed evilly. You really got plenty of voodoo blessings out of this one, shall we say.
Well, thank you. I hope so. I mean, I hope it continues to stay that way. Definitely any filmmaker will know that making a movie at times, I think everyone's felt cursed making a film. It's hard. But,
I know.
We're coming out the other side of it now, and hopefully the politics will stay with me.
Liam, thank you so much. This has been such an interesting and wonderful interview with you about A Cursed Man. I hope we get to chat again in the future when you delve further into the into this area.
Fantastic. Yeah, thank you so much. I've loved this interview, and yeah, I appreciate it. And absolutely, we'll definitely let you know when we where we're off to next.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Liam. You go have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you, Debbie. Really appreciate it. You too.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye now.